Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is another episode of the Accidental Quantum Physicist, and you're listening to it. I'm podcasting due to accident, and I accidentally became a quantum physicist. Certainly, I suppose, a sort of a combination of thinking of all the properties of a scientist. There's skepticism, there's naivety, there's curiosity, there's optimism. You sort of all those things. I'm sure there was another property that I thought in there, but I think those sorts of things mean that if you've got those things, it means that there's sort of random circumstances, you'll sort of find knowledge. I think those properties in the human race in general has meant that in spite of all things, we've found things. That's sort of the alternative that most people think, oh, I've thought of new technology because I want to blow that next person up. And unfortunately, for most of us, we're not... I don't know, most people don't want to blow the next person up. And so if you look at the vast majority of science, it's not people wanting to blow things up. People want things to be better, and it's those things coming together. Now, what I'm going to do is that it's very overwhelming, I think, to actually talk about the wave function. You know, that's an awful lot of numbers, three dimensions of space, three-dimensional space, with every little pixel of that, a voxel of that space, having a number in it. And, if you do computer graphics, you're used to that sort of thing, if you do digital printing. But there's an awful lot can happen if you look at one-dimensional Schrodinger wave equations. What physical system could be possibly one dimension? And there's a whole lot of approximations which are good but break down or can be patched up once the time independent Schrodinger wave equation. So you can divide your Schrodinger wave equation into a spatial bit and a time bit. I wonder if that breaks down. And that's supremely beautiful because you have got a spatial bit which you can solve, and the time bit is just putting a phase number in the complex numbers, just putting a phase value. You know, your complex numbers there, and just say, okay, well, all that is operating with a phase. So you can put a sine theta in your complex numbers, and it just oscillates around, and so your quantum wave function is a shape, but it sort of pulsates like this cuttlefish with in a complex space. That's a nice thing to do. That's still three dimensions, and still a bit mind-blowing, and, it's a bit head-scratching, I must admit. There's another approximation which is called the Born-Oppenheimer approximation, which means that I can put in a simple diatomic or chemical, so to speak, mostly diatomic, the easiest thing, the two nuclei I can put on a line. I can say that there's, I've got, say, a hydrogen atom, or let's say lithium hydride, for instance. I can have the lithium nucleus and the hydrogen and the hydrogen nucleus. I can say, look, they exist on a line, and they can either get closer or further away, and I'm going to move into that framework, that frame. I'm going to change the frame, and that gives you one dimension. And in order to do that, people had to do a little bit of work because basically an atom is described by the my shoes beginning to break apart here. Bloody hell. So I've had these shoes for, I would say, the best part of 3 years. And I've done an awful lot of walking. I have to get some more shoe glue and glue it together. Oh, this is going to irritate me if I'm at the base of this big mountain which I'm going down and have to climb up with this. There's nothing worse than walking with a shoe which is falling apart. Sorry for that, people. You find it distracting me talking about it. I find it bloody distracting having a shoe sort of wanting to kiss the ground, so to speak. Okay, now, going through this beautiful quiet point, I know that as I come round the gorge and opens up into a view of Sydney, there's going to be this wind, but I can say there's a temperature inversion, so there's not this rippingly cold wind going through here. Okay, let's get back onto it. So the Born Oppenheimer. So Oppenheimer's that freaky, geeky man who let's build the bomb, let's blow the bloody people. Oh, that's awful, it's awful, what have I done? And he's the man who is so intense and so spiritual. He wanted to run off with Linus Pauly's wife. This is so insane. This, and Born, my version of a nutcase. Okay, I don't like him. I've got no personal animosity to people, but yeah, he's caused so much harm overall. But the Born Oppenheimer approximation is really good. It says that I can treat the atom as a basically in one dimension, as the one dimension being simply the distance between the two nuclei. And if I were to say, if I could freeze them, so the two nuclei in a molecule, the nuclei are getting closer and further across as they're vibrating. That's a principal thing. And then if they rotate, I can consider that as some sort of perturbation, some sort of magical thing. So this is such a powerful, powerful tool. And it's, what a joy to get into it. Okay, so I can say, I just think ballroom dancing. I can look at this incredibly beautiful tango of two people, and I can say, oh, they're doing it, their skirts are flying everywhere, and they're looking into each other's and blah, blah. But if I could actually do that entire tango by saying, it's just the girl and the boy, the distance between the girl and the boy, and over time, that distance going up and down, and sometimes they're spinning. Well, the way it goes up and down will be slightly different. Okay, there's a bit more to it, but in general, if they're not spinning this way, and I can model their spinning as determining how they go back and forth from each other. So I can even get rid of spinning. So if you can imagine a ruler, bit unnerving. So I'm going past this creek and there's these wallabies having a graze. At the other side of the creek there, sort of safe from dogs and stuff like that. There should be no dogs around here. On the other side there's a leash off area, and on the other side, so you'll not get anything up that area. Where there's no dogs, there's lots of wildlife. Okay, getting back to it. So you've got the Born Oppenheimer approximation. And so what we do is, say you're filming this, at any shot of these ballroom dancers, and you've only got your Wi-Fi, and you're only getting the separation between them, there's a, say they've got one, when the male's got those big, I think Spanish puffed sleeves, and they're the lady has got this big voluminous dress and, you know, hair everywhere. And what you can say is that any two people, they can't get close because their dress is pushing against, and if they go further apart, their sort of passion is pulling them further together. But at any point, if they are say a meter apart, I can actually go through and calculate the shape of their dresses. Now, the shape of their dresses are the electron wave functions. Okay. So what I do is I say, you know, further to the next trick I do is I say I'm only going to describe a molecule purely by one number, which is the distance between two molecules, and furthermore, I can account for the force between those two things by calculating the shape of the electron wave functions as if those things are not moving. Okay, they're moving, they're frozen in time, and because the electrons can move comparatively, or they I suppose move infinitely fast, I would say. In my view, they would do. They move really fast, so it doesn't matter how fast they're oscillating. It's only the separation. And so you're... She was so... So, what happens is that if I say lithium and hydrogen, you're 1 picometer apart, or a few, say 300 picometers apart. I've forgotten what the actual distance is. If I say you're that far apart, I then say, supercomputer, the electrons are in these symmetries, wave functions, and they've got to interact. Tell me, oh great supercomputer, this is true. You at the end, you can do back of the envelope calculations, you can do observations from spectra, but yeah, at the end of the day, for any molecule, you really have to get your supercomputer in to work out what that wave function actually does. And at that time, you can actually say, these wave functions. Now, the wave functions will either pile in the electric charge, a fraction of electric charge between the two nucleuses, and they go, and want to suck together, or they are saying, hang on, and they're on the outside, and these nuclei can say, oh, yuck, and push apart. But what I can do is that I can take each instance and of this, and with one dimension, and actually plot a curve underneath called the potential energy diagram, the potential energy curve for that group of symmetries, to say how much they're attracted and how much they're repelled. And the story is as they get really close together, the electrons are going, what's going on here? The two nuclei can see each other. They go, yuck, and they get repelled. So if you go really close, the nuclei go, we're not doing fusion tonight, baby. And they just push apart. And as they push apart, they go, see you later. And the electrons, like children, all rush in between mummy and daddy. And they bring the family back together. So this, I can't believe I'm absolutely embarrassed by saying this. Okay, so that's your bond, and it vibrates. Now, this vibrating bond is what makes carbon dioxide absorb. I suppose infrared. I don't really like saying that, but it definitely is for oxygen absorbing deep ultraviolet light. Okay, we're getting out of here a moment, just as this car rockets past me. So, that's the Born-Oppenheimer thing of saying it's only one dimension, And we can cope with the other dimensions by making that, all those other dimensions, a single number. So, which is the attraction between the two, or the energy between the two, which is the potential, your potential curve. So, your one dimension comes to a two-dimensional graph. That is, for each dimension, you've got a number. So, for each dimension, I have an attraction number. Comes down, all those complexities come be, and saying, do I love you or do I hate you? It's a love-hate thing for your molecule. And it's just the love-hate factor. So they hate being too close, but they hate each other when they're too close, but you know, distance makes the heart grow fonder. And so that's your energy, your potential energy diagram. Now, there is this thing, is that for each symmetry, so for each symmetry of things, so when I talk about a symmetry of a wave function, if you can remember way back, I said you can actually get a wave function, which is this beautiful surfaceless blob in 3D space, and you put a twist in it, and that twist is adds symmetry to it. That side, if I put a knot in it, it's no longer symmetric about one point. If I twist it, it's got a negative symmetry. If I twist the left and make that negative with respect to the positive, it now has got a symmetry. For it. So symmetry says, you know, what can I say? Symmetry describes something. So you could say symmetry, you like to think of a circle and a triangle has got various symmetries, but you also say that chairs and tables have a certain symmetry. You recognize them, what they are. And so if you start off with it, a certain set of symmetries, you would imagine that those symmetries are conserved as you go in and out. And so you've got different, for each different symmetry, there's symmetries, you've got a, sorry mate, just having a look around here, just feel uncomfortable here. There's a light here. Okay, there's people waiting in their car, and they're out of car. Okay, so it's often one of these, you know, Australia does have drugs and all this stuff, crap. This time of night, it's hard to say. You'd think this is a Wednesday, so you don't, yeah. Okay, they're okay. They're back. So you're looking at what various people are doing. Okay, we're back onto it. So, for a molecule, that is two atoms coming together, you have a potential energy diagram which says how much those atoms love or hate being together. And if they liked being together, there's a sort of a well, it's sort of like a little rat gets trapped there. Oh God, it's another car. They get trapped together. Now, for each symmetry, if you've got, you actually have an infinite, or not an infinite number, symmetry, I would generally say, I don't know, something like, I was trying to think from memory, there's generally about, just give it a number on it, between 10 and 30 interesting symmetries of of electrons as they come together. There's so many different electrons, and you can twist them up in different ways. They come together, and there's this, if you imagine a network of these like roads, a railway system which come in, and they may attract, may repel each other. Some will just go up, some will dip down and go up, and at the end of the day, they'll all repel each other. There's nothing, no way that electrons can actually attract nuclei and get them slammed together. Otherwise, it would have nuclear fusion everywhere happening. That unfortunately doesn't happen. So if you can imagine this railway system of all these tracks, and some of the tracks at the bottom go up, just are always repulsive. That is, the electrons never pile in. In some of them, say the lowest one or even the high ones coming in, they come in and they start to say, "This is not bad, I like this," and the electrons rush in between the two atoms, and so they glue together, and then they're repulsive. So you can imagine these like train tracks come in, and it's just the tracks cross each other, and you can imagine things crashing in, insanity, you know, of all these different things coming in, and they cross. And this is a feature, and I want you to imagine these lines coming in from your right, and on your left is the axis of zero separation. The energy to get zero separation is basically approaches to protons, nuclei hitting each other, and worse still, they've got electrons out the back going, "Bloody hell, we're out here. We're all separated." It's like the kids are going, "Mom and Dad, come pulling away from the outside." So there's things that are the electrons, like the kids pulling the parents together, or the electrons can be, the kids can be on the outside. "I want to go this way, I want to go to the beach, I want to go to the mountain range, I want to go skiing," and it's, you know, let's call the whole thing off, pulling across. But as you can imagine, all these 30 different roads coming in from the right, some dip downwards, they all eventually go up, or some just go, "Oh, I don't like this," and they all push up. And as you can imagine, these different lines, if you just got these lines, if you just get a piece of paper at different things, and some go down and some go up, you'd say, "Oh, bloody hell, mate, they're all crossing." Well, let me tell you something. There is the non-crossing rule. Wave functions, these one-dimensional nuclei wave functions, separation, or they're not wave functions, they're actual potential energy curves. The potential energy curves never cross. What do they do? So if you were to draw an X on the page, and I told you, and they do cross, I told you, you have to draw that in such a way that it doesn't cross, but looks pretty much similar to it. And what you can do is you can get your bottom pen, go along the line, and then just at the last moment where it's about to cross, bit, and down. So the bottom line stays the bottom, the top line stays at the top. Your non-crossing rule. And there's nothing funny about that in nature. It's just that it's not saying that there's no, electrons don't suddenly change symmetry. It's just they're doing their things, and my description of what's going on, so I have a certain sort of range of personality types I can do, and the electrons don't know these person. It's sort of like, I don't decide, "Oh, she was, I'm going to have to get mature. I have to know how to grow up. I've got to develop a personality here. I know what I'll do. I'll go to the library and read Freud. And do it. The electrons aren't reading quantum physics books. They do it. They don't read the books. And so your symmetries are symmetries which you love because you love mathematics. They're mathematical simplifications. And they're beautiful because you can write them down. But but in real life, they'd never cross. And so what happens is that if you can imagine a curve coming from underneath and going straight up to infinity, another one which is going above and then dives down and up, what you'll do is that you will have a potential energy curve at the bottom which goes up to escape, to repel, but then it says, hang on, there's another curve coming down. It's not actually another curve, but another symmetry coming down. It will hook over and drop down and then go up again. So what happens is that you can have a curve which is a bit repulsive and then it goes down as attractive. It's not just attractive the whole way forward through. How often does this happen? Well, may I say, it happens all the bloody time. Absolutely all the time. What it is that going up, sort of imagine you're driving a road up and you can sort of see in the sky the next going up to the to infinities. I mean, I'm repulsive. You're like you could be a redneck. I hate this, and you just hate the entire thing of Bond, and you go along, and you drive along and you realize that you're redneck, and then socialism and love takes you over and you bind, and this hill that you go up, this thing where you say I hate you, I love you, is the activation energy of so many chemical bonds, and it's just chemistry is oozing with this quantum mechanics, and you got this feature, and look, there's other things in terms of that. You can have something which a highly excited state would fly apart, but it's been held in by this activation energy, and then it over time stays there for a while and dissociates. So this is something being unstable, chemically unstable, is because of this feature and all these features. This is so much chemistry. It's the activation energy. It's why you have to heat something up to get the reaction going in these sorts of things. And so you have to heat it up, get over the energy level, and then you have to have another molecule to punch it down. So what happens is that although you draw the line like this, two atoms coming together will have its certain certain speed and energy, and they will fly in, so they sort of fly above this, and they sort of fly in about, say, 10, they're in a little light plane, flying 10 meters above the surface, and then your propulsion hill goes up to 30 meters, so they go in and they bounce off this and fly away again. Or, they fly in at 40 meters, and so they're flying above your potential curve. And as they're flying in there, bloody hell, get out of my pinch curve. They get hit by something, and it drops down. And that's your activation energy. The non-crossing rule, all this type of stuff, is all there. But if you, it's sort of like learning, you're in a foreign country, and you're learning phrases, a phrase book, and you haven't got an idea of what the word is, not the grammar, something like that, and you want to say, oh, der Windmühlen ist umploft. So I think that's the windmill has blown up. Windmühlen ist umploft. Mein Damen Herren, whatever it is that they ever say, always in those German stations, or Willkommen, and all this type of stuff. It's like, if you don't know the quantum mechanics, you are forever condemned to be a tour guide and to say, it is understood that these weird people, these weird things happen. There is such thing as an activation energy. Can you explain? And they say, they don't say, oh, well, look, don't you go off and do a quantum physics course. They say, and no one knows why. This is, God made it that way. Or they'll say, so poorly. That's blah, 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 blah. Heisenberg. Blah, 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 blah. And then that's, and you listen, and all they've done is they've said, I don't know. Big name, big name, big name, and you're stupid. And that's not the case. That is seriously not the case. The quantum physics is so, like, this is kindergarten stuff. You can actually do the spreadsheet for these sort of things. You can do it in Excel. Because all you have to do the wave function, Excel's for it. Now, I want to finish off on this. Gosh, I've got so much work. I've got to really scratch my head about what I'm going to do for the next podcast on it. But finish off on this in terms of, imagine a molecule which is just so bound. It's got just enough electrons to be useful. So it's a small nuclear family. It's got two helium nuclei. It's got three electrons. And so it's He2 plus. Imagine those three electrons. You can pick those. You can actually do a sort of pi electrons. And pi electrons generally sit above and below the train. And the other ones you can put in the center. And you can just say, everyone together for a family shot, and you can actually put these together, and you can actually make the most intense number of electrons between N2 nuclei, and the nuclei aren't big, they're helium, so they're not bloody well charged, you know, pushing away from each other, so they're not, you know, uranium nuclei, they're helium, so they've just got enough charge, and you've got just enough electrons in, and you can cram them in, and you can make the smallest molecule ever. And so the world record smallest molecule is helium-2 plus, or one which is a little bit smaller, is with an extra electron in there, which actually binds. And it is really struggling to do any more. It's the most, it's the smallest bond length, helium-2 plus. There you go. And that's a molecule that I calculated, and there it was. And what you go, it's just like, it's like a marginally smaller than the world record smallest. It looks a bit smaller. And then you go, well, I could, it said there, but I could put more wave functions in, and go, I could be there, but it looks so small. But there is more. You're talking about absolute horror in terms of coming in. These electrons are going, absolutely no way, mate. And they've got your energy, which comes in, is super repulsive. And so this is getting absolutely repulsive. The curve's going up, and it's going up against the most bound thing ever. Now, the bound thing is a parabola, so it's got a binding, then further away, it's saying, we love you so much, so it's actually takes a lot of energy to separate it apart, because it's so well bound, it's really super glued together. But if you cross through this, you've got this super rising field. Now, of course, this is so well bound, it's much higher in to the repulsion curve. So the propulsion curve really comes up, and we're going to, oh, what the heck? There's an attractional curve dipping down. And so what happens is that you've got this molecule, I think it's 1.43 EV, electron volts. It's 10,000 degrees of activation energy. It is the highest temperature molecule to exist in a plasma. And it comes in, and you need a huge amount of energy to get up that activation energy. And then when you make it, it's the most bound at all possible. Now, there is a bit more quantum physics to go with it. And this is something which defies all the record books. Now, again, I suppose this is the accidental quantum physics. This is helium 2 plus. If you look up Peter Colin Hill, helium dimer laser, I think it might be it, on Google. Colin, C-O-L-L-I-N. Look, I'm not... it's the accidental quantum physics. It's an accident that I've... that you're listening. It's an accident that I've had to bloody well lose weight and bloody well get fit, or people... It's sort of like doctors saying... Like, you go into doctors and say, well, oh, I can now breathe this much and I've lost that much weight. And they go, that's excellent! And that's the only thing you get in your life. You only get, oh, that's excellent. Yay! What about the rest of life? Oh, it's like a nuclear holocaust outside. It's just absolutely, unbelievably shit. However, so it's an accident that I'm here. So it's an accident that I've actually got to do these episodes and got to the curve crossing episode. And you can imagine the combination of joy, awe, and loneliness. What can I say? As I sort of stood up and said, this is the way it is. This is, it has to be this. I didn't have the explanation of why, when it got over the trough, did it absolutely just go bloody hell and go right down to the bottom of it. They said, oh, no, it can't be. Oh, I can't understand. Even though there was enormous evidence for it, because these arc lamps produce... The helium arc lamp produces a huge amount of it, and also produces a huge amount of buckyballs. So there's all this physics going on, and I'm afraid I'm a senior person here. Nah. No. What grabs me is the hollowness, the void in thinking. This person saying, I've thought no now, and now if I can meditate no for long enough, it can get there. And so you have to say no, and you say reason. Oh well, it's just unlikely. It's not that the evidence is not there. It's unlikely that you, a person I don't like, will find it. And you go and you say to yourself, oh well, that's, I haven't put myself as a factor in these equations here. I haven't put my a personality factor in here. If I did, so the thing is that I had this enormously bright light, this potentially the world's smallest molecule, brightest thing, the highest activation energy, the highest energy molecule possible, and this mystery, how did it go across? And of course it's a helium 2 plus, and helium 2 plus forming in the recondensing plasma. So what's happened is the energy has gone off, and the electron energy is beginning to fall. It's beginning to recombine, and that's this electron bonds with helium 2 plus. Now the rate, recombination rate, goes up as the, I think it's the sixth power of the charge density. So if you've got more electrons there, the electrons bump into each other and recombine with an iron at 6 power. So if you have a plasma of, say, 1 amp or 2 amps. Now, 2 amps doesn't seem a lot more. That's not 10 times more, but let's say 2 amps, the magnetic field increases and increases the current density in that to incredibly high. So you've got 10 times more charge there. And the other thing is that a electron and a neutral atom is nothing. Electron and a charge, the charge has got this huge, like it's a charged atom to an electron is 1,000 times greater cross section. It's a huge cross section, and it goes up to 3.8. I can't remember. Really high, but essentially you can increase your recombination rate by a factor of 1,000. Why is this important? Well, because an electron is trying to dock in with a vibrating molecule. Now, the one thing is that a vibrating molecule has a lot of energy. It's got this vibration energy. So the electron docks in and it goes, bloody hell, piss off. Thank you very much. I was trying to cool down, but you've just given me the right thing. I can actually just reduce my vibration rate and piss you off. Piss the electron off. And so what happens is the electron temperature drops, and then the vibrational energy, which is stored in that transiently produced molecule, then reheats the electron thing. And actually, in your 10,000 degree plasma, so this is an arc, this is something that you don't want in a laser, because you want an excimer laser, you want these exotic molecules, and this comes together and actually produces a this produces molecules at temperature wise close, well, definitely negative temperature, maybe down towards absolute degree zero, minus 100 degrees Celsius easily. These curves that you get out. And so you can actually produce this ungodly chemical reaction just by following in the quantum mechanics. Now, what's even more is that it's down here, and this is, you know, these tracks are slightly high up, and the very base one that it wants to radiate to is repulsive. So it produces broad continuum, which incidentally looks exactly like a black body radiator. But you can prove it's not a black body radiator. So it's all these circumstances come together. And of course, black body radiation is the tour of force, which started us off in the discovery of quantum physics. This is Max Planck, as Planck's constant, looking at boxes. He called them boxes of action. Doesn't that tell you what it's all about? Well, thanks a lot for listening, and I'll see if I can get on to the next podcast, have a think what I'm going to do. Alright, see you soon.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.